The following podcast is brought to you by Radio Southland and New Zealand On Air. Radio Southland is a community access media station based in Invercargill, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, radiosouthland.org.nz, for our contact details.
Hi everyone, I'm Nick and I'm the host of Nightlife at Radio Southland, where me and my co-hosts talk about the weird, wild and wonderful aspects of history and historical martial arts. Our plays are every Wednesday and Sunday and you can find us on Spotify. We'd love for you to tune in. Welcome back to Nightlife. I am Nick and I am joined by my co-hosts George and Sean, and today we're going to argue for 20 minutes. What are we arguing about, you may ask? Fencing styles. We have been doing historical fencing for many years now, and we have all developed very distinct styles and, in some cases, very distinct opinions. And so we're just going to talk about the different fencing styles that we know and that we've learned, and what we think is better. Clearly mine's better than you guys, but we'll get into that very, very shortly.
This is your opinion.
You're not going to be able to comprehend the level of random bull crap I'm going to pull up out of nowhere.
Right. So we are members of the Invercargill Medieval Club, where we practice historical fencing and historical martial arts. If that sounds interesting to you, you can find us on Facebook or Instagram to check our training times. We love to have new members, and we train on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Now, fencing styles. Now, Sean, you use this disgusting weapon called a rapier. Now, do you want to tell the audience what a rapier is?
A rapier is a weapon that came to dominance at the end of the medieval period. It is quite a beautiful weapon, right? They get quite elaborate in their design. And if you're wealthy, they look rather beautiful. They get, you know, gold, silver plated, jewels gems.
Encrusted in them.
Beautiful stuff. But this isn't like an ornament. This isn't like a pretty thing that you just have at your side. You kill men with the rapier, right? If you look up the English records for deaths in the UK in the year 1600, or like, you know, the 1600s, just in general, flat, the number one killing weapon is a rapier.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
There is a YouTuber named Matt Easton, or Scolio Gladiatoria, who has done a 20-minute long video of him going over all of these historical accounts. Now, granted, a lot of the instances he's talking about is a guy with a rapier killing a guy with a stick, but
so what you're saying is rapier fighters are cowards?
No, I'm saying they're champions. A rapier is a blade that is always going to be longer than yours. It's long and narrow. It's made of high-quality steel. It's kind of like a needle, you know. If you've ever seen Game of Thrones, the needle that Arya Stark has, imagine that, but it's longer than the longswords, or a similar length, or same length as the longswords, and it's got an actual cross guard, or a knuckle guard to it.
Is the needle not more of a side sword? No, not side sword, small sword.
No, so in Game of Thrones, the Issosian people are based heavily off of, like, Italian, Spanish, 1600 stuff.
Would you say that the thinness of the blade, its great advantage, is also a disadvantage against heavier weapons such as a long sword or an arming sword?
Nah.
Like, especially when with a long sword or arming sword, you're going to have to defend against slashing against a much heavier blade.
You know, the rapier is an excellent slashing weapon, right? Now, the blade may be quite nimble, but it is not a weakness, right? You can simply maneuver around, catch with the knuckle guard or the cup guard, depending on what style of rapier you have. And you can advance up and poke. Or you could company it with a parrying dagger or a buckler, which completely remedies the issue. You have to see, when you're fighting with a rapier, you're fighting a bit differently than a man standing squared onto his opponent, slashing and hacking him down.
I will admit, when I fought you with an arming sword, so a one-handed, you know, broadsword, I do struggle to close that distance. However, when I take a buckler with my arming sword, you have to pick your battles a lot more carefully. And I would say I would rather take a buckler with my arming sword than I would take that rapier.
Rapier with a dagger would run circles around you. You see,
tomorrow. Tomorrow, you can take your rapier and a dagger, and I'll take a sword and a buckler. And then when I absolutely wipe the floor with you, with my fundamental footwork and my
boring footwork,
my fundamental footwork,
bro stands tall like a barn house,
yeah,
wide enough to poke holes in.
Tomorrow, next week, after I've beaten you, I can glow and you could tell me how terribly sorry you are that you ever doubted the raw power of a broadsword.
I think you're going to have a hard time gloating when you're sat there on the ground, you know, bruised and battered.
Well, again, I'm going to be throwing out those cuts at you. And you're going to be trying to poke at me with the rapier, and the buckler is going
to
be
the perfect... I simply don't even need to deal with the cuts.
You just
slash at me from out of measure. I simply just maneuver around you, traverse, circle around your blade, and poke a hole in you. I take your heart. I cut your hand off. You know, I poke you to pieces, and that's it. You're done.
I would argue that in a historical setting, if I were to say, put on armor, Your little thumbtack isn't going to do anything to me.
I'm gonna stab you in the eye. Yeah, what happens in armored combat, right? When two people with swords meet, that's right. They start thrusting at the weak points. And what do I have? A thrusting sword.
Hey, he's got you there.
A thrusting sword, a more... thinner, brittle thrusting sword compared to the mighty
long sword. Flexible. Not brittle. This is at the end of the medieval period, the Renaissance period. The metalsmiths, they have perfected the art of making steel. My steel is superior to anything you can field.
So you're saying...
I've got 150 years of better blacksmithing in my weapon.
I'm pretty sure longswords existed in this time period too, in the Renaissance.
Oh, they were kind of dying out.
Yeah, they were dying out.
They were still around, but they were dying out.
But the same blacksmiths were making them, were they not? With the same steel. And a longsword is just as long as a rapier and bigger. Bigger equal better, Sean.
Yeah, but it takes more effort.
Yeah, but if you look at all of the historical accounts, quite interestingly enough, this is something I have never seen before, but you know Hellish Court?
Yeah.
The people that do that, they've got a YouTube channel, and they constantly post YouTube shorts about their video game and stuff. And they've also got, like, a little bit of historical shorts that they do, which is, like, nice little tidbits to look at.
Yeah.
And in one of them, they talk about their decision to include longswords and sideswords in Hellish Court, which again is, you know, like a late 16th century type game where it's sabers predominantly.
And sideswords was kind of around, it was like the kind of the weird transitionary point going towards full-on rapiers, sideswords. Mm. And it was around like early medieval to early Renaissance.
Yeah. They existed in tandem.
I think having a sideswords, like through all that period, you know.
Wait, hold up a second. We need to go back to what I was saying. No. So the Hellish Court YouTube channel, they released a YouTube short where they talked about the use of longsword in, you know, the 16th century. And they talked about it being a legacy weapon used by senile old men.
Well.
Oh, this is great.
I am neither senile. I'm older than you two, so I guess you've got me on that one. However... You know what, then? If you think the longsword is...
Are you a man or are you not?
I am a man. I believe so. You know, I wish you had just lost your train of thought completely when you started going on that sideswords tangent.
Hey, have a go at George. The boat.
Well, I mean, you guys are commenting about, like, your itty little bitty bucklers and such. Well, I'm over here with my big old targe that protects my whole left side, almost.
Do you want to explain what a targe is, George?
So imagine a buckler, but it's bigger. It's bigger and it gets... It's a Captain America shield.
Okay.
Pretty much, that's... what a targe essentially is. It's like...
Well, what's it made of? What does it have?
Typically, they're made out of wood with layers of fabric in between two planks of wood, essentially. And they're rounded, and then they have a layer of leather over top
to kind of act as...
Do they have a rim of metal, or...?
I don't believe they have a rim of metal around the outside, but they usually did have, like, bronze or metal studs throughout the front. Sometimes, very interestingly, some of them would have a massive, like, spike coming out the middle. So it could literally just be your own stabbing thing if you get close enough to someone.
Where was it worn on the body?
It was worn on your forearm, like Captain America's shield.
So you wouldn't hold it like you would?
No, it was strapped onto your arm.
So it's like a round shield that you strap to your arm. I actually have a question about that. So how... you're going to love this, Sean. In the Heimskringla, there is an account of a duel in which the each fighter gets three shields, right? Oh, because the how round shields in the Viking Age worked is you would strike it.
There's no way you're possibly trying to make the argument.
I am asking a question.
How would you replace it?
Trust me. No. I'm asking. So in the Viking Age, you would need multiple shields because a sword would get stuck in there and you'd have to discard it.
So that's why the multiple layers.
I was going to ask how...
So you have the one layer of wood on the bottom with another layer of either cotton, any kind of random linens, the straw, that kind of stuff in between. Another layer which you would glue on top, and then you would have a layer of leather over top, and then you would all basically nail all into place with those pins.
So would it be common for someone using a heavier weapon to get that stuck in there? Or is that
I don't actually know.
That's a good thing. What? Yeah. If someone with a halberd brings down on your head and the shield takes it in its entirety.
I would reckon, maybe, there have been accounts, like there are records of like techniques for fighting what is called a Lochaber axe, which is basically... how do I explain it? Lochaber axe. It's basically an axe, a pole arm that's about the size of up to your head, with a massive axe head. Not the typical axe head you would see, but more of like what you'd see with a war scythe, but like on the actual pole of the, like down beside the pole, like an axe would be, rather than at the end. So, and you would have a lot of leverage behind it. But
have you seen Resident Evil 5? There's a character that uses a big axe in that. It's like cartoonishly big. Like, imagine a stereotypical like evil executioner man, and this is the image you've conjured in my head.
Yeah. But no, yeah. There have been records, and even in one of the books I read, there's techniques on how to fight against one of those using a sword and targe. But no, yeah, I would reckon, yeah, possibly, you would get a sword or a weapon every now and then stuck in it, but they're not that hard to get off your arm, because you just don't have them, like, pulled extremely tightly, so you can just drop them if you need it.
It's got a quick release system, exactly. Like a modern-day military backpack.
And, I mean, if it's too tight, it's just uncomfortable on your arm, because you need a bit of wobble so you can actually get certain angles with the shield as well.
I remember seeing Dagger...
Yeah,
because strapped to your arm, you can hold a long knife.
That's another thing that a lot of Highlanders would do, is they would have what's called a dirk, which is essentially, it's a very long knife or a very short sword.
Is dirk just the local Gaelic translation of knife, or does it mean anything special?
I don't actually know what the translation of dirk is, but it's essentially a traditional Scottish knife that like a lot of people would just carry around. It's... I don't know if it's ceremonial or anything, but it's, yeah.
Are you just arguing you're going to beat Nick to death with a Taj, or?
No, I just have all that defense and being able to just block all his strikes coming from that way, and you guys have small shields, so.
The system works around the shield,
yeah, it works around the shield, yeah, because you're basically, I remember watching a video one time, and a dude explained it being like, there is like five rules to using a Taj. And the fifth rule was, forget all the rules, do what you want. So it's like...
You know what, George?
Follow the rules until you don't want to anymore.
You know what, George? While you're busy holding that shield up, protecting your chest, I'm going to swing low, take out your legs.
Hey, man, I'll just step out of the way. That's one of the good techniques from the...
Shoulder charge you and knock you over.
That's what the spike on the end of my Taz is for.
You know what that means? Tomorrow, you have to bring out your sword and Taj, and you have to fight Sean's rapier.
I can take on two men at once.
I am sorry to say, Sean, you don't usually have wouldn't have me agreeing with George, but I feel like his bigger punch shield is going to be a bit difficult for you. I genuinely believe you will struggle to get punch. And because George knows some rapier technique himself, right?
He's
going to be rather efficient at keeping you out of distance and closing.
You've trained me too well.
That might be the case. But the rapier is still better than whatever the hell you're bringing.
I agree.
George, how dare you? I defend you and you stab me in the back.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I do, man.
Well, no, again, I have a much heavier punch behind my weapon. I reckon you might have the advantage there. But when you make a mistake, you're going to make a mistake and you're going to feel.
Yeah, but will he make a mistake before you make a mistake?
You see, I have the benefit of it not being my turn, right?
I have the benefit of keeping you 2 meters away from me.
Yeah. Well, that means you have to make the move. And if I block in the right place with the buckler, then I'm going to close that distance. You're going to get a big old arming sword to your face.
I'm going to stab you in the toe.
In the toe?
Yeah, in the toe.
In the toe.
In the foot.
In the foot.
Yes.
Is that a wager?
Yeah. All right.
All right. All right.
They shook hands.
Sean has agreed to stab me in the foot.
Swing low.
If Sean doesn't stab him in the foot, he loses.
Yeah. In order for you to win this match...
I have to stab you non-lethally in the foot and not the face or throat.
Yeah. You at least for one instance of play.
Just do a good old sidestep. It'll catch him off guard.
No, I've just developed the most diabolical plan imaginable to achieve this goal.
Hey, what's that over there?
Church!
Throws your sword.
I love how that is an actual TD. I think it was Fiore who did it, but like you just point towards, oh, look, it's a dog or something behind your opponent. They turn and just stab them.
In one of Fiore's works, he has it where you literally toss the buckler at the person's face to cover their eyes.
Is it Fiore or George Silva who throws the sword?
Fiore has got sword it throwing is as well. Fiore also has bollock kicking.
That's right, yeah.
Rather brutal time period.
Speaking of bollock kicking,
what's interesting is both of the weapons you guys are choosing, you know, you sword and targe, you rapier and dagger, is primarily dueling weapons, whereas with me, with my arming sword, was more warlike weapon.
That's probably where you have the advantage over us, is ours are probably more a one-on-one duel.
What are you talking about, George? The targe and Scottish broadsword are used all the time on the battlefield.
I'm more thinking rapier. Like, mine would be fine. Mine would be perfectly fine.
The rapier was carried on the battlefield. The Germans would specifically have side swords designed like rapiers for rapier users to wield on the battlefield.
Wasn't this when firearms were a thing, though?
Yeah, well, firearms are the thing for you, and you're hiding behind a piece of wood with copper studs.
Hey, I will say, someone once tested it. I'm not saying how credible the test was, but someone once tested it. If you slope the targe at a perfect angle, a bullet goes in and it bounces out.
If the stars align and the gods bless me, my shield will protect me from anything.
George, it was actually really interesting to watch, but basically what happens is you angle it, the bullet pushes your arm down enough where
what if he shoots
down.
You in the foot, George?
Then that's unfortunate.
I was about to say, you're aware you couldn't do this thing called aiming.
Yeah. this was back with like flintlock, matchlock rifles. So they were a little bit less accurate.
I've had the joy of shooting a couple of flintlock rifles. They're actually, you can tone them and work on them to be very accurate.
Well, I mean, that was during the American Revolution. Mm. What the Minutemen would do is they'd hide in ambushes on the side of the road and act as sharpshooters for British columns. And this was, you know, when they were still using muskets and such. So a musket is a much more accurate weapon than a lot of people make it out to be.
Usually, hand cannons into the early forms of matchlocks and stuff, those weren't terribly accurate.
No, they weren't very reliable.
A lot of the time, they weren't accurate because you couldn't see where you were firing.
Smoke everywhere.
You had to look away, otherwise you burnt your eyes out.
Nah. As a man who has fired a primitive musket, you stand there and you take it. You feel the black powder hit your cheek
and
burn.
Early hand cannons, like, they were so, like, overpowered that you literally had to turn away, otherwise the smoke burnt your eyes.
To be fair, if you're holding something called a cannon, accuracy is probably the least of your worries.
Yeah, most definitely.
Oh, that Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 scene where they reveal the siege cannon.
Oh, yeah.
Have you guys seen that?
No, I have not, actually.
Oh, it's so good. You got to look it up on YouTube.
Mm. You know, we should explain how a duel actually works, both historically and, I suppose, in our... what we're going to do tomorrow when
and
I
and
prove...
And I'll get all hypothetical.
Yeah, when I... Hypothetical, I'm going to prove the sword and buckler is superior to your flimsy side swords and rapiers.
If it truly was so superior, then why does the rapier continue on further on past your weapon?
Don't worry about that. So, how... a fencing duel in HEMA, at least our rule set typically works, is you have each round goes for 1 minute. And during that 1 minute, you fight your opponent. And different parts of the body are worth different amounts of points. So head is worth 3, a torso is worth 2, arms and legs are worth 1, hands are not a valid target.
The reason for these rulings is hand snipes are like really easy to do.
That's super easy.
Well, I mean, like if you're fencing very safely, right? It's you can make it really hard for your opponent to hit your hand. But it's more fun if you're going for the big targets. And the reason why there's the point system, because as well, if you have a double hit at the same time, you get points deducted. Is because this is a modern sport fencing system we're doing, right? You know, in real life, I'm not gonna hit my opponent in the chest and then let him hit me in the chest or the head, right? That's going to hurt me.
Mm-mm.
Whereas we can stomach that with all of, you know, the safety gear and the dull swords, right?
But there needs to be some sort of punishment for getting, like, double hits and such.
Which is why if, say, I hit George in the torso, he hits me in the head, we both get points deducted from that because it's not a safe hit. The whole, I hit my opponent before he hits me, didn't work historically, and as...
It definitely happened historically.
It happened historically.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The amount of tournaments that ended up with both opponents dead because they hit each other and one of them dies of a fatal death and the other one dies, like, 2 days later because of a wound.
Yeah, well, fencing was a very dangerous thing to do back in the day.
Mm.
But, and we fight for 1 minute, and then you have... Is it best of 2 rounds...
Best of three.
Yeah. So whoever's most points at the end of the round wins, and then it is the best of three. So the first to win 2 rounds wins the match, and they are declared the winner. Now, this is another going back to the hands not being a target. Historically, wearing thick gloves or gauntlets was something you could walk around with.
Like, George Silver talks about swords with not full basket guards or cross guards. You never fence with those without a gauntlet on.
Yeah, yeah. And so a lot of people would bring hand protection. Hand protection is also something you can walk around the street with, like with a gauntlet and such. But you can't walk around, go to the market in full plate armor or anything like that.
Says you. I'll do it.
I'd be a bit sketched out if someone was walking around with military equipment in public.
Yeah, just like why is he all kitted out?
Yeah.
Well, Fiore though does talk about instances where he's gone to other cities, claimed to be a fencing master, and then been challenged to a duel. And the only thing that they've been allowed in the duel is a gambeson, leather gloves, and the longsword.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I suppose it was first blood back in the day.
You'd have to go to First Blood. You wouldn't want to kill a man because that brings up a lot of problems.
That makes you a criminal.
Well, no, there were specific laws about dueling.
But, I mean, it varied from place to place as well. You could go to a place and, like, there are no rules.
Dramatic judicial drooling.
Yeah.
I say he's innocent. Let me fight you and prove it.
The whole idea of trial by combat is pretty whack to me.
I love the marriage dispute ones where it's like the man has got one arm tied behind his back and is put in a hole.
Yeah, and put in a hole and the woman gets a stick. A free reign. The woman gets free reign and a stick.
Who even, like, came up with these concepts? Yeah.
Someone who thought it would be funny to have his mate's wife do that to him.
Yeah, oh, most definitely.
Tomorrow. The challenge begins. We decide what is better. Arming sword and buckler. Rapier and dagger.
Easy.
Or Taj and side sword.
I think Taj and side sword.
You know, guys, I'm going to throw in a wild card here, but
flaming trebuchet.
yes, dude, yes.
Don't encourage him, Sean. Yes. Don't encourage him.
The trebuchet.
Now
it always wins.
Well, we want to thank you to everyone who's listened to us ramble about us arguing about which style is better. Especially since we're going to find out that arming sword and buckler is better tomorrow anyway. You're just wrong.
I think you're wrong.
You know, George, it's actually quite offensive to lie on national radio, which is what you and Sean have just done.
I'm going
to
throw my shoe at you.
Let the record show, Sean has threatened to throw a shoe at me.
He's threatened to stab you in the foot.
I can accept that. I cannot accept in good faith his shoe. This show is available as a podcast on the Radio Southland website, radiosouthland.org.nz. You can stream or download from our site. Just look at the programs tab. Links to stream podcasts can also be found on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Radio Southland. You can subscribe to the Apple Podcast platform and never miss an episode. And also check us out on Spotify, our main platform outside of Radio Southland. Search us out and make sure you follow us. Or there's the updated accessmedia.nz app. Just download it for free from Google Play and make sure you select Radio Southland as your station. I'm Nick. I'm joined by Sean and George, who are totally going to lose tomorrow.
Nah.
And you've been listening to Nightlife on Radio Southland and Free FM.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by Radio Southland with the support of New Zealand On Air. Their funding of accessmedia.nz makes these podcasts available. To find similar programs by other stations involved, go online to accessmedia.nz.